Hello, hockey humans of the world, and welcome to Tough Call Pod Season 2, where I talk about all things player safety in the NHL. Questionable hits, controversial calls, join the over 2,500 others who follow me on Twitter, at Tough Call Blog, like and follow the Tough Call Facebook page, and find me on Instagram as well, Tough Call Podcast, for videos of all the latest incidents and to hear my takes on them. Send me your own clips of any hit or call you'd like me to talk about, and take a second right now and hit the subscribe button on this podcast. And while you're there, you could also leave me a review, preferably 5 stars. It'll really help me reach even more people and get the message out on how we can reduce the instances of head contact and concussions in hockey. Did you subscribe? Perfect. And thank you. Now on with the show. Hi, folks, and thanks for joining me again at Tough Call. It's been about a month since my last episode, I think. Anyway, I've got some great news. Now, a few weeks ago, I put up a poll asking if you'd like to see me do some short videos of incidents and breaking them down as I watch them. And I was asking, would you watch them? And an overwhelming 92% of you said yes. So I thought, well, that seems like enough to try it out. And so there's a new Tough Call YouTube channel. And I do have my first video available already, which happens to be about the controversial Killorn hit on Nietzsche from a few nights ago. And there'll be more videos to come as I adjust to the routine of creating them. But right now I'm asking you to pause this show, not right this second, of course, because you have to listen to why I want you to do first. But once you pause it, go to YouTube, click on the search bar, and type Tough Call Channel. You'll find me there, hit subscribe, and you're done. While you're clicking around, if you don't already follow me on Twitter, do a quick search for @ToughCallBlog and follow me there as well. I'm close to 3,000 followers now, and I've got all kinds of great content there. It's where I'm the most active. As opposed to some of my other social media, but you can also find me on Facebook at Tough Call and on Instagram. Once you're following me everywhere, come back and finish this podcast episode. So are you ready? And go. And now, assuming you've paused the episode, done all that, and now you're back, don't forget to hit subscribe on this podcast as well, wherever you're listening to it. Give it 5 stars and leave a review if you like. I'd love to hear what you have to say, and you'll probably have a lot to say after I jump right into my first topic of the day, which is the McDavid elbow to Byron from Wednesday night's controversial 4-3 Montreal win. In case you haven't seen the clip of the McDavid elbow yet, there's actually not much video of it anywhere, really, so I found a video on Twitter, and I made it my pinned tweet. If you can access it there, that's great, and if not, you'll just have to take my word for what I say, I guess, but I didn't find it that bad, to be honest. Now, last night, watching it once, live in real time on a small TV with no replays whatsoever, I thought it was worse than it actually was, and my immediate impression was he should be suspended for sure, especially given that he was recently fined $5,000 for what people are saying is a similar thing, his elbow on Kotkaniemi the last time they played Montreal. But this one is different. When he got his fine, that contact was delivered much later, after the puck had gone, and McDavid had to go way more out of his way to do it. And that's the last I'll compare these two incidents, because I want to focus on this one between McDavid and Byron. But I did feel the need to say they were different. I'm not saying these are similar incidents, and they shouldn't be compared, and the punishments shouldn't be comparable. So anyway, to give a brief summary, McDavid had just back-checked another Montreal player, I think it was Deneau, into the neutral zone. Deneau was carrying the puck out of his own zone. McDavid was back-checking, chasing him back. And in the course of their battle, they both went down. And Byron ended up with the puck just outside his own blue line. As Byron gained possession, McDavid had just slid on his belly backwards out close to the red line and had just gotten his balance again when Byron started carrying the puck towards him. So he took a couple of steps towards the middle, McDavid did, to cut Byron off so he couldn't cut back. And then when Byron kept going straight across the blue line towards the boards, McDavid had to very quickly readjust his positioning to prevent Byron from getting around him and going up the boards. It sounds like a lot is going on, but I want you to remember and think about this. In real time, all this happened in less than 3 seconds. Think about it as McDavid. You've just skated very hard and battled to stop Deneau from getting up the ice. You're sliding backwards on your belly. You get up quickly. You've barely got your feet back underneath. You haven't even taken a stride yet. When you suddenly have to change direction, and then you change direction again, immediately, in another tough positional battle. It was going to be a very close race to the space between him and Byron, and because his feet weren't quite going yet, it's what I talk about all the time. If your feet aren't going, if you're standing still and you're not quite ready to go to contact, you have to lunge. So McDavid lunged himself as far into Byron's path as he could. because he couldn't move his feet or use them enough to push and get there in time. So he just sort of reached out in desperation. He was trying to get as much of himself out in front of Byron as he could, in front of Byron's shoulder and his chest, to stop him from getting up the ice, to cut off the space. He couldn't get there with his feet, so he reached out with his body. And as I always say, when you lunge out, as your legs extend and straighten, your body naturally also has a tendency to go up as well. It's what happens when your legs straighten. When your knees straighten, you explode out, but you also go up where you're reaching. It's exactly why I have a problem with people exploding into hits. I hate exploding. I hate lunging. I hate people going for extra force. But in this case, it's a matter of exploding into the space to try and cut an opponent off. And it actually happens very regularly. Think about a situation where a player has a puck going towards the defenseman pivots to go forward with them, and the opponent is going to beat them wide, so they reach out with their arm and try and get their elbow and their arm out in front of the player's chest to cut them off. And it becomes a very questionable holding situation, but not quite, because they're still in a positional battle, they're still moving their feet enough to justify reaching their arm out, because they still think they can get out in front. And that's what this is. Now, and having said that, I can see the argument for an elbowing penalty or a roughing penalty or something along those lines, because the only reason this isn't head contact is because Byron turns his head to the side away from the contact. His shoulder ends up absorbing most of it. But I call that a penalty in the context of a hockey play, though. It's not a blatant elbow. There's no true arm backswing by McDavid like you'd see if someone were actually throwing an intentional elbow. You'd see a swing and a backswing and a big force, such as the one McDavid was penalized for earlier in the game on Corey Perry. It wasn't that forceful, but his arm went up, it went forward, and there was a backswing. And that one, to me, should be a fine or suspension. But this one isn't. And what I want to make clear is this one on Byron doesn't show any sign of being a deliberate attack like most of you are making it out to be. There's an easily justifiable hockey purpose here, which I just went over. It's a positional battle, trying to cut him off. And the actions he takes that support that intent more than it does a deliberate intent to injure. If you watch the video, does it look like someone who's trying to hurt someone? Or does it look like someone who's just trying to make sure they're competitive in that battle? I think you should put your pitchforks away. And now for my next topic, which is one of my all-time favorites, cross-checking in the NHL. Greg Wyshynski caused a bit of a stir when a couple days ago he tweeted about an item of interest coming out of a meeting between NHL GMs. And for those that don't know, the GMs meet a few times a year, and parts of those meetings do revolve around discussing possible rule changes. So it is valid to think something meaningful could come out of them. And anyway, he said, quote, "There was a presentation by Colin Campbell that zeroed in on cross-checking, specifically which kinds of cross-checks the NHL is going to start cracking down on more," end quote. And that got me kind of confused. I mean, looking at it from the other side, if you're going to crack down on some cross-checks and you're trying to determine which ones to crack down on, then what kind of cross-checks does that mean you're okay with? Is there really a need to specify which ones you're going to crack down on? I mean, a cross-check is a cross-check, isn't it? There is literally no acceptable type of cross-check. There is no hockey purpose for putting your stick up in a cross-checking fashion and pushing with any kind of force. And as we've seen, it doesn't take much force at all to see serious damage no matter what type of cross-check it is. Evgeny Malkin missed significant playing time 2 seasons ago after what was a fairly standard cross-check of moderate force beside the net. TJ Oshie missed almost an entire playoff from being injured by a light cross-check push from behind that it sent him flying off balance into the boards. It doesn't take much at all in any situation for a cross-check to become very dangerous. And also, according to some excuses that I hear all the time, it seems to be rather difficult for players to control where a cross-check lands on an opponent. Because how many times do you hear, "Oh, I didn't mean to hit him in the face, or the ear, or the back of the neck, or wherever it was, the head. I hit a shoulder pad and my stick just kept riding up. I hit shoulder or arm first and it rode up into his head." I mean, raise your hand if you've ever tweeted that excuse to me to defend your player, and I should see a lot of hands because I've seen it a lot. So how about instead of cracking down on a certain type of cross-check, how about cracking down on the body part struck? The only hockey purpose, and I use that term pretty generously when talking about a cross-check type action, the only hockey purpose is maybe using your stick in two hands to push a player away. No backswing, no force. Just placing your stick on someone's body first and then a little shove to create space. That's it. A little bit of a positional battle.
And to keep it even more simple, there's no reason to do that anywhere on someone's body higher than the back of the pants. So that really, really narrows it down for everybody. So as I always suggest for cross-checking, only a light cross-check push to the pants is acceptable. And only if it's used with the hockey purpose of creating space or separation. Anything under the middle of the back or the chest or anywhere like that is going to be judged very harshly on the side of a minor penalty, in my opinion. Anything to the upper back or upper chest is an automatic minor penalty. Not questionable, automatic to the upper back or upper chest. And any cross-check higher than that should be an automatic major. We're talking upper shoulder, neck, ear, head. Those are automatic major penalties. I should hear no more. I hit the shoulder and it rode up into the head. That's too bad. For the purpose of the rule, that should be all the same body part, because what are you trying to hit the person for in the shoulder anyway? So gone should be the days where a cross-check to the face is a minor penalty and a $5,000 fine, the way it sits right now. That's the way it is. Sometimes it's not even called a minor penalty. Sometimes it's called a roughing instead of a cross-check. And it's always the maximum allowable $5,000 fine. That is rubbish, and it's not helping because they happen all the time. It should be an automatic 5 in a game and a 3-5 game suspension minimum for any cross-check to the face or head or neck. And if you don't think that's realistic, I can tell you I've applied that standard consistently through 2 regular seasons and 2 playoff seasons. I've been keeping track of these and applying that standard, and I've never had a problem. I've never looked at one and said, oh, I'm not sure. I want to do that according to my rules. I want to give a suspension, but it really doesn't deserve it. No, I've never had that because they've all deserved it. It's cut and dry. It's honestly pretty easy to do that because it's less of a judgment call. It's written right there. There's concrete standards to fall back on, and that leads to consistency in punishment and better yet, a clearly defined standard for players of what to do so they can quickly settle into good habits, because you don't just want to punish bad habits all the time. You want to actually encourage them to do the right thing too. This sets that up very clearly. Not that any of it matters, because it turns out they don't really care about cracking down on cross-checking at all, because yesterday afternoon there was a follow-up tweet from Mr. Wyszynski saying, quote, I've gotten a little more clarity since the initial report. It sounds like this was more of an education / refresher about the current standards rather than a signal they're cracking down on them. I mean, it's telling enough they felt the need for an educational reminder on what the standards are, because no one knows what they are, and I'd love to have been a fly on the wall for that session to hear what his explanations were. But it becomes all the more relevant as I dive into my final topic, which is the proclamation that Montreal's 4-3 victory over Edmonton Wednesday night was like a playoff game. And it had everyone buzzing that the Montreal Canadiens are in full playoff mode. Shea Weber has silenced his critics. The Canadiens found a way to make life miserable for Oilers stars Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, among others. Now, as I talk, keep in mind, this game was played Wednesday night in that GM's meeting that I just talked about with that refresher on the current cross-checking standard. That happened earlier the same day. So in one day, you get, in the afternoon, a meeting between all the general managers about the cross-checking standard, and then later that night, you get the game we had that I'm going to talk about between Edmonton and Montreal. So more on that in a second. Stay tuned. Hi, folks. Thanks for listening to Tough Call. If you're enjoying my takes on head contact and player safety, but you'd like to hear me talk about other aspects of hockey, I'd like to take just a minute and tell you about another project of mine, Bolton from Bolton. Bolton from Bolton is where I, Josh Bolton, and my brother Matt, you guessed it, Bolton, set each other up for lively hockey talk covering literally anything to do with it. It's not heavy analysis and stats, it's kitchen banter, like you do with your own family and friends. Head over to YouTube and subscribe to our Bolton from Bolton channel. That's B-O-U-L-T-O-N. Or find us on all audio formats as well. We find ourselves funny. Maybe you will too. And there's only one way to find out. See you there. And now, back to Tough Call. So now to that game. The Montreal Canadiens and the Edmonton Oilers first squared off Monday night, I should say, earlier in the week. The Oilers were down 1-0 in that game heading into the third period, but completely dominated the Canadiens in the final 20 minutes. I watched that game, and there was just nothing Montreal could do to stop that from happening. They were outshot, outskated, outskilled, outcompeted. But what impressed me the most was the physicality, the positional battles for space and time that the Oilers won over and over again. Now, obviously that wasn't as impressive to Canadiens fans, and they hoped for a little more competitiveness, we'll say, in Wednesday's rematch. But with the way Wednesday's game went, they would definitely argue they got what they needed out of the Canadiens. The Oilers' stars were slowed down very effectively, and the stars became frustrated. Even as the Oilers pressed on, trying to tie it up and right the ship, the Canadiens piled up a 4-1 lead in the third period, and they held on during the final blitz to come up with a major statement 4-3 win that everyone's talking about. As evidence, of course, a lot of the talk became about McDavid's alleged attempted elbow to Byron's head that I talked about earlier, and how he's such a baby, you know, it's the second time this year, just fined for the same thing, Montreal was in his head, blah, 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 McDavid, baby, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know how I feel about the elbow, or should I say non-elbow, that I talked about earlier, but the most important part of the story is what made this feel like a playoff game to most viewers? What was it, and why I said during the third period that this game was essentially unwatchable for me? It's about how the Canadiens were able to slow the Oilers down, and how Weber achieved his best game of the year. It wasn't by being smart and outworking them. It wasn't by being committed to team defense or anything like that. It wasn't a strategic maneuver by them or them playing significantly well. It was by throwing the regular season rule book out the window and hoping the officials wouldn't say anything. And guess what? They got their wish. It was absolutely brutal. And I know Habs fans are going to say it was both ways, but you're quite simply wrong, period. I'm sorry about that. There were a couple missed calls on the Oilers. Sure, there was a couple, but the penalties ended up 5-4. Five penalties against the Oilers and four against the Canadiens. And anyone watching that game who thinks that sounds about right is out of their mind. And in fact, one of the penalties for the Oilers was when they were pushing for a comeback in the third, and Leon Draisaitl got an interference penalty for finishing his check on a Canadiens player who he played the puck so recently that he was still in the middle of following through from his clearing attempt when he got hit. How do you call that an interference? Another was a delay of game for an unsuccessful challenge for goaltender interference after Anderson's goal to make it 4-1, where he kind of knocked Mike Smith's stick out of his hand. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I think that goal should have stood, but that's just one of the penalties they got. So, like, it's not like they were extremely dirty in earning these penalties. And that ended up as a very important game-winning goal, of course, when all that was said and done anyway. So there's a reason they challenged it, and I would have let the goal stand, so they deserve to lose it, in my opinion. But the point being that the Oilers didn't get a real penalty there. It was just a standard-issue penalty, nothing to do with the way they played the game. Now, one of the penalties they did get was Mike Smith did trip Tyler Toffoli, so he earned that one, even though some Oilers fans say they didn't. But he definitely did trip him. And McDavid did elbow Corey Perry, so he earned that one. And Chiasson got in a fight for the other penalty. So there's not a whole lot there that shows that they were playing extremely dirty. But I don't care about that either way. It's not even the penalties that were called against the Oilers. Like I said, they earned each one of them, and there was probably a trip or two here and there that could have been called against them that wasn't. That wasn't the issue at all. It was all the ones let go that should have been called against the Canadiens for doing things to the Oilers, and in particular, Shea Weber, who reinvented himself all right, but not as the supreme positional defender. He reinvented himself as Captain Crosscheck, in my opinion. I don't know what Colin Campbell said in his lecture to the GMs, but if the entire presentation could have been supported by examples of crosschecks from one game, it would have been this one. This one game alone could have given him an entire presentation's worth of material. And someone actually tweeted out, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who it was, but there was a great picture of a mid-crosscheck Shea Weber. He was in behind Leon Draisaitl in front of his own net. Draisaitl was just bent over with his head forced down the moment the picture was snapped, and Weber's stick was still resting across the back of his helmet where he pushed in on the crosscheck. And the caption of the picture was, "Frame it." And I'm thinking, exactly, because this sums up that game entirely. And Habs fans are, of course, ecstatic about that. And as an Oilers fan and a general hockey fan who wants to see skill and speed take over the league, it's disappointing. Now, at the moment, also, the Oilers were already on a power play at that moment, and it would have given them a 5-on-3. But so the standard for anything drops severely in that situation anyway, which is ridiculous. You pretty much have to kill a guy before you get your team a 5-on-3. But this one was just so flagrant. It was almost laughable. And it was like that all night. And the few times the Oilers tried to fight back the same way, the chippy way, like McDavid on Perry or the sneaky Smith trip, it was called. They got penalties for it, because that's what you should do. If a team tries to bend the rules to gain an advantage, they should be called out on it. But even when they tried to fight back the right way, it was either called anyway, like Drysdale finishing his check hard. He finished his check hard but clean, and he got a penalty anyway, or they were taken advantage of by the Canadiens players because the Oilers were playing things the right way, the Canadiens weren't, and they weren't getting the calls. It was a classic situation of Montreal saying, okay, their skilled guys are better than ours, so we have to neutralize them if we have any chance of winning, which is great, but it shouldn't be just a no-holds-barred, completely different standard kind of thing. The NHL should be promoting and rewarding skill more than anything. I always say that. But in a never-ending quest for parity and violent rivalries, which they seem to love, they let it all go. Now, here's my disclaimer that I'll say to anyone who's talking the way I'm talking. Yes, I'm an Oilers fan, so you can accuse me of being biased. But I would hope, first of all, looking back at my history, you would think more of me than that by now, that I'm not biased, that I try and hold it as objectively as I can. And second of all, I'll tell myself the same thing I say to anyone who cries that their team is getting screwed over. Guess what? You're right. You're right. You're validated. Your team is getting shafted. But in general, your team's not getting shafted any more than any other team, ratio and proportion-wise. That's where you have to rein it in a little bit. I can complain about this, in this case, using the Oilers as an example, but really, I'm complaining for many teams in that situation. That's the way the game changes in the playoffs, and it's not fair. And look, after these two games, the Monday and Wednesday, everyone's saying how fun a playoff series would be between them. And I'd be in that group. I'd love to watch a playoff series between these two teams because they're so similar. They actually have a lot of the same problems. They have consistency issues and questionable depth. That's what it is. So their scorers need to carry the load a little more disproportionately than on other teams who are a little deeper and can get scoring from some other places. When the Canadiens were winning at the start of the year, their scorers were hot. It was so exciting. The trade acquisitions, the moves they got, the new blood. It was pumping. And the mood of the team was great. But when they went cold, the team went on a slide too, and it was ugly, passionless hockey, and it was hard for them to get out of it, which is why this win is understandably exciting for everyone, because it looks like the passion and fire is back. And obviously this year on the Oilers side, they still depend way too heavily on the scoring from McDavid and Draisaitl than ideal, but they've been the more consistent team of these two throughout the season. They've been so much more consistent than Montreal, and that's what should allow them to win a 7-game series. Now, if Montreal digs their heels in and goes to work, as they say, they can at least compete with everyone, and a bounce or two could get them a series, and one that they would deserve in that case. If they decided to just pull up the bootstraps or whatever it is that you say and go to work in a playoff series and play the way they can play, if they play to the peak of that lineup's ability, then they would be able to get bounces and maybe get rewarded that way and deserve the series win. But to have this display on Wednesday night, to have that be your playoff strategy, to grab and cross-check and depend on leeway from the officials, that shouldn't even be an option, let alone a valid option. And now, are they the only ones to do this? Absolutely not. Are they the main team with this reputation? No, they're not. There's other teams that their strategy is to bully their way to the Stanley Cup. But there's a reason that they're one of the teams that are more well-known for doing this, more so than they are being well-known for one of the teams that complains about it. The saying goes, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. But I think the saying should be, if you are cheating, you're not trying. Because if you were trying hard enough, then you wouldn't have to cheat in the first place. I don't want to see a playoff series won that way. I want to see hard, competitive, physical hockey. As I always say, I love the contact and I love the physicality, but I want the officials to do their job when they need to so that teams continue to play hockey. It keeps the quality of play higher. It's much more enjoyable to watch. And if one team gets a bunch of power plays, then so be it. They'll just learn not to do that the next game. And if they do, then they deserve to lose the series. They don't deserve to catch a break because the penalties are adding up on one side or the other. They deserve to catch a break by learning to adjust and play hockey the right way. At Tough Call, I'm not trying to pick on specific teams or individual players. I want to make the game safer for every player on every team, across every league, really, with no player left behind. I want to cover as many incidents as I possibly can to increase the sample size and make a stronger case for how harsher penalties and properly targeted player education can work in reducing head contact in hockey, all instances of it. The Department of Player Safety supposedly has people watching every second of every game. Now, as much as I'd like to watch every game, as much as I try to, and as much as I'd like to have video of every questionable incident, the truth is, I'm only one man with an iPhone and the Game Center app.
I already get a lot of help from people like you who send me videos or links to incidents, or even just a quick tweet or message saying, hey, did you see? Third period, Bolts-Kings game, checking to the head penalty. Something like that. It means a lot, and it makes a huge difference. Follow me on Twitter at ToughCallBlog, and like the Facebook page ToughCall, and as you watch, if you see a cheap play or something dirty or anything that makes you go, hey, you idiot, what are you watching? How did you miss that? Please send it my way, and a big thank you to those of you who already do. Keep them coming. How you know, man?